97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
All right, we got Cusimano coming up here, as we often do and always do, really, on a Monday and a Friday. We'll talk a little Mizzou and Illinois football. I feel obligated because they played better than Mizzou, even though they're not my favorites, but that's okay. Brad, do you agree with me? Brad Young is with us this afternoon, that Mizzou sucked and they've been overrated the entire season, and they're probably going to lose every other game from here on out. I'm kidding about the last part, but I'm a little depressed. I'm a little bummed out right now about the way that this season's going.
I can hear it. That's why anytime you need therapy, Mark, you just call me. Because I'm going to tell you that if Brady Cook plays in the next few games like he played last season, we could go undefeated or near undefeated. If he plays like he played in the last two games, then once again, we're going to be overpromised and underdelivered.
Yeah, it seems weird to me. It really does. He doesn't seem to be clicking. And there's time. And, you know, if we're being honest about Drink's teams, they've gotten better as the year moves along. So there's ample time. And by the way, they have a bye this weekend, so that's helpful. And then they face Texas A&M on the road, so that's not going to be easy. But we'll talk a little bit more with Cusimano on that. Brad, before I get into some of the stuff with this assassination attempt, you had another police officer, David Lee, who was killed here in St. Louis over the weekend because of a migrant that should not have been here who's now been charged with a DWI. And this is a story that once again is going national for St. Louis, Brad.
Yeah, oh yeah, it makes us look really good, doesn't it? But the other point of this story, obviously, first and foremost, it's tragedy. It's tragic anytime someone dies in an accident like this. It's exponentially more tragic when we have brave police officers passing away because of not just only drunk driving, but activities of illegal aliens.
Yeah.
And we see so often in the debates, in the mainstream media, that anyone who talks about crimes committed by illegal aliens, a.k.a. undocumented workers, anytime we say that, conservatives are mocked, they are marginalized. And yet here's yet another example of someone who clearly could have been deported. He was arrested in 2020 for basically the same charges, DWI. He was assaulting an individual. He stole a car with a child in the car.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Perfect stuff. Like, he strangled a woman, punched and kicked her. He took a child, drove away, accelerated the car toward her on the street, trying to hit her. He pleaded guilty in 2022 and was sentenced to 5 years probation and parole. There you go. There's a good
right.
sentence.
And right. St. Charles reported him to the Department of Homeland Security. After he was arrested in 2020, what happened with that? Crickets. Nothing happened. So this demonstrates that there is an issue. If he had been deported after he was arrested and convicted in 2022, Officer Lee would be alive today. That is unquestionable and inarguable.
I think that two things here are true, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. But I also think that if you take the immigration status out of the mix here with this guy, it's the same old tired story with a lot of these, kids, and I guess not always kids. Multiple violations in the back, pretty serious violations, long rap sheets. And then you say, how the hell was this guy out?
Exactly. And this fits in with the current philosophy of many mainstream prosecutors across the country. We saw it with Kim Gardner, this idea that we really shouldn't be putting anyone behind bars for any significant reason. But this is why we do that, so that repeat offenders don't exponentially increase the severity of their crimes. Like this instance, where now we have a police officer who is dedicated to his job. Now he's deceased because of these lax incarceration policies.
Brad Young is back with us, 97.1 FM Talk legal analyst, partner with Harris Dahl Fisher & Young. We're finding a lot out about, I don't like to say his name, this dude who was clearly trying to kill Trump with the second assassination attempt last weekend in West Palm Beach. And he sat there in what they're now calling a sniper's nest, and he wrote a note that said, look, this was an assassination attempt. He confirmed it for everyone. So if you're in doubt, which I don't think you should have been, he writes a note out saying, look, maybe I failed and I apologize for that. This guy wants to be a hero. He wants to be perceived as a potential hero. You can just feel that.
Well, he even says it in there. He says in his, quote, manifesto, whatever you want to call that note, he specifically stated that he tried his best. It was an assassination attempt on Trump. And then he said, if I don't if I'm not successful here, I will offer $150,000 to whomever can complete the job. Now, in all honesty, I don't think this guy had $150,000.
Right.
He didn't have $150, much less $150,000. But the bottom line is that he not only admitted to attempting to assassinate Donald Trump, but he was willing to offer someone else to finish the job.
Now, Trump kind of issued a statement saying, look, what he's being charged with is a slap on the wrist, but you can still build a case with further charges as more information comes along.
Absolutely. And additional charges will be forthcoming. But you have to understand that at the time of the arrest, really, he hadn't done anything at that time of the arrest. So the method for prosecutors is always the same. You charge them with something rock solid, even if it's minor, because you want to take them off the street and put them behind bars. Then you have time to build a case to increase the charges and to increase the incarceration. That's exactly what's happening here.
You know, I think this has been mentioned, Brad, in some of the coverage, but I'm not trying to let the Secret Service off the hook for any of this. I think we know that there's some serious questions, certainly what happened in Pennsylvania, but Trump likes to golf, and we know that. And we also know now from cell phone pings that this guy was doing a little recon, right? And
he was
gambling a little bit. Hey, will he be here? I think he might be, because this is a bit of a pattern. And I don't know how, without shutting down an entire very big perimeter, you could prevent this from happening, because he's outside so much on golf courses. I mean, there's a lot of range there if someone puts their mind to it. So I don't know if they're not going to let him do this between now and the election, or what the situation would be. But I don't think he's out of risk, given the fact that his lifestyle puts him at risk all the time.
True. And there's two points on that. First of all, if you look at the information that was released today regarding the info from this guy's cell phones, he had even Googled how to travel from Palm Beach to Mexico. So he was anticipating his method of escape. But secondly, and more to your point, this has been a long-standing issue. I mean, I remember memos going back, multiple presidents, going back to at least Bush the first, talking about how golfing outings are a problem,
right,
for the Secret Service, because you have large areas. You have large areas where there might be other people there, and you simply cannot quarantine an entire golf course. So it's a known issue. And if I were on Trump's security team, as much as you could tell him anything, I would say, you know, no golfing until November 6th.
Well, because, you know, and he plays fancy golf courses, but even fancy golf courses have beautiful big homes on them. And what are you going to do? Go through every home and do a search if you're the Secret Service?
Impossible.
It's not feasible, right?
No.
So
no, can't happen.
That is risky. All right. So I'm asking everyone on this Monday, 6 weeks before the election, which would be 6 weeks from tomorrow, where you think the state of the race is right now.
Well, I think if you look at the polling data, and I never look at any polling data until after Labor Day, because any pre-Labor Day polling data is frankly irrelevant. But when you look at the polling data, we're past Labor Day, we're 6 weeks out from the election. If you look at the polling data in most of the swing states, I think at this point, Harris has the advantage. And a slight advantage. But at this point, she has some momentum. She got a bump from the convention, not a huge bump, but she did get a bump. And then after the convention, that slight increase did not go back down. In other words, she is now plateaued at a higher rate than pre-convention. So if things stay the same right now, I think she would win the election. We don't know. There's always what we call the October surprise. We don't know what that would be in this election. But as it stands now, I think she's slightly ahead.
I think she's slightly ahead, but I see a lot of things that are encouraging for Trump in some things that have broken here in the last couple of days. North Carolina and Georgia are still in question, but some polling that is a little bit more encouraging for Trump out of there. And I still love what they're doing on Real Clear Politics, Brad. As you know, they're doing This Day in History. And that was a site that started in 2000 as just a polling site during that election, which became obviously very historic. So they do This Day in History on September 23rd, 2016, 2020, and today. So in the national poll, Hillary Clinton was up 3 points. Biden was up 7.1. And right now, Harris is up 2.2. So that's definitely margin of error. In Wisconsin, Hillary Clinton was up 4.7. She lost Wisconsin in 2016 because her voters didn't turn out. Biden was up 6.9. He won Wisconsin. Harris is up 1 point. So that's very Pennsylvania. 4.7, where Biden led 4.5, Clinton 5.6. Pennsylvania well within grasp. Ohio's an interesting state because Trump was up 1.8 in 2016. Biden was up 2.4 in 2020. And Trump's up overwhelmingly 9 points. I guess my point is the pattern here does show Harris in the lead. But, man, these are very, very narrow leads in Nevada, in North Carolina, in Georgia. Anyone who has the lead, really, it's very slight. So I think it can break in either direction. But you're right. Right now, it might look a little bit more favorable to Kamala Harris.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that the polling data really went through a revolution as people switched from landlines to cell phones, and pollsters have had to adjust to that. I mean, the 2016 race will go down in history as one of the most notoriously inaccurate outcomes when it comes to polling. But I think in the 8 years since the 2016 election, you've seen some improvement in polling accuracy because they're switching their models to incorporate these changes in how we communicate. So I think the polling data today is going to be better than what we saw 8 years ago. But clearly, right now, it's still all within the margin of error.
I have a little bit different take on what happened in 2016. I know a lot of people want to point to that. And I'm a person that's never really wavered away from polling because I know there's a science to it. I think that some of it in 2022 was certainly questionable. But if you do look, where they screwed up in 2016 is they didn't really dial in on these states and they assumed some things that they shouldn't have, these pollsters. But overall, when you look at how the race ended, it was a 3-point race with Clinton winning nationally. You know, I guess really it was less than that. I think 2.1, 2.2%. That wasn't too far off from where the polling was showing. It was basically a 3-point race, 3-4-point race nationally. So, yes, some of it was wrong. But I also think that it's I trust the polling maybe less today than I did in 2016 because of what you said about the landlines, et cetera. I'm sure that there are more people than there were in 2016 kind of hiding from the pollsters. Wouldn't that sort of be conventional wisdom right now?
Boy, you know, my gut tells me that's right, but I haven't seen any data to back that up.
Well, the pollsters probably have that. Brad, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Take care.
My pleasure.
MIZZOU. All right, we'll see what happens with your prediction.
Get more at 971talk.com.